Welcome to our Alpha Study series, where we collect insights from top investors and business leaders, brought to you by Opto Sessions. In this exclusive episode, we delve into the minds of renowned experts of the investment world to better understand how they get their edge. First up, we sat down with John Champaglia, CEO of Sprott Asset Management, a champion of precious metals investing, to discuss how their focus on metals and mining gives them a competitive edge in the thematic ETF space. You were founded by Eric Sprott in 1981, a champion of precious metals investing, of course. Sprott is known for its focus on precious metals as a result, and energy transition investments now as well. But do you believe that that narrower focus, I suppose, gives you an edge versus other thematic ETF providers in this space?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, metals and mining is very technical.
Yeah.
I think it's a really strong advantage that we have that because we only do metals and mining, it gives us a lot of insight. The other thing we do is we do everything from physical commodity funds to passive strategies to active strategies. So when we're designing our passive strategies, we're often using all the learnings and intelligence and subject matter expertise from the people doing, you know, active work in the area, as well as the what we learned by actually buying and stockpiling different commodities. So I think that ecosystem that we live in is very valuable. We often will look at some competitor ETFs and have to chuckle, quite honestly, because you'll look at some like green metals ETF and I'll look at the holdings and say, why is there a gold company with oil and gas royalties in that particular fund? That makes no sense to us whatsoever. But I see why that happens, because you go to an index provider and you say, can you build me this thing? And nobody really peels back the cover and say, well, what does that company really do? And that's where we, you know, I think that's where we've come in with these particular ETFs. We've tried to really focus on pure play exposure. And that's been a process, and it's a lot of work. And what we do is we basically try to identify companies that we think are involved in energy transition, but then actually peel back the cover and say, okay, how are they involved? And what other exposures do they provide? So people might look at our ETFs and say, well, why don't you have you know, why don't you have Valet in there? Or why don't you have Glencore in there? Why don't you have Rio Tinto in there? The reason is not because we're making a call on those companies or we think they're not world-class companies. The reality is they have most of their businesses involved in things that we don't think are critical. Are they important? Sure. But iron ore is not going to be as critical as lithium for the transition. Or a company still might have legacy exposure to coal. Well, this is, you know, coal is the opposite of what we're trying to achieve here. Yeah. So we'll exclude those companies, even though they might be really big market cap companies. So we're trying to focus on the companies that are either have revenues and or assets tied very specifically to the critical minerals that we think are going to be the biggest beneficiaries of the transition.
Long-term investment horizon was something that I saw plastered all over your website. And there'll be specific reasons for that, which I'm keen to hear. But how do you weigh short-term market fluctuations with that long-term perspective?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because mining in general is a volatile sector.
Yeah.
It is volatile because commodity prices can be volatile, which we've seen over the last year. We've seen oil, you know, go from 80 to 120 and back to 80 or, you know, 60 something. So a lot of commodities are volatile, but also the companies are also can be volatile. Why? Because many of them are in development stages, which means they're pre-cash flow, or they're trying to build a new mine, or they're trying to explore for a new mine. So those companies just generally are less liquid and more volatile because of their stage of development.
Sure.
So if you're going to be thinking about this thematic, you want to think about the big picture secular growth drivers, which we think there are many of them. But you also don't want to get whipsawed around and get kind of washed out because the sector might fall 20% in a month, which it can do. So it's something you want to think about carefully and, you know, almost dollar cost average in. And you have to stick to your conviction. I mean, one of the things about our founder, Eric Sprott, that I was just amazed at, and I know part of it was because his name was on the door, but the amount of conviction he would have in some of his trades was just unbelievable. Like, even though he might look wrong for a long time, he eventually looked right. And when he did look right, he looked like a genius. And he would be willing, it wasn't being contrarian for the sake of being contrarian.
No.
It was willing to be contrarian when popular consensus was different.
I was keen to understand your process for identifying new markets, new products. How do you go about validating those ideas before actually listing a fund?
Yeah, well, financial services is a very challenging market for for product development, because you don't have any intellectual property rights. Anybody can copy your idea the minute you launch it, right?
Yeah.
So it's very hard, and the reality with thousands of different ETFs around the world, the ground is well covered. So as a small boutique money manager, our goal is to try very hard to find the unique opportunities that we think are coming,
yeah,
or have not been met, or the products that have been or in the market today are not well thought through because they don't have expertise in the area or whatever. And so we're really trying to narrow our bets. We listen to our clients very carefully, mm-hmm, either face-to-face meetings. We do a lot of social listening. What does that mean? We are on Twitter all the time and LinkedIn. Yeah. We're constantly watching for what are people talking about? What are they tweeting to us? And this is important. This has become more important, as you know, than ever. I mean, we think of investors on Twitter as a giant institutional investor.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take them seriously, even though it is the Wild West out there.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have to, as a collective, take them seriously, because when they get their minds on something and they start to team together and share ideas, it's unbelievable how much capital they can move around in the markets. So we listen, we do a lot of social listening, and it's really just thinking about would we put our own money in that? Does that make sense? Because often we do seed our funds with our own capital, and it's not easy to find $10 million to put into a new fund to get it off the ground. So we have to think it's right for our clients. We have to think it's right for our own capital and shareholders, and we want to stay committed to it long term.
Next, Yuri Kodjamirian, CIO of Tema ETFs, a newly launched platform offering actively managed thematic funds, revealed what makes Tema different from its peers.
How does Tema achieve alpha? What's your main source of edge versus peers?
Again, great question. And as a sort of what I'd like to explain is kind of our investment process, where we have these four pillars of the way we look at individual stocks. I think what's really important is you have these four tests and how they work together.
Mm-hmm.
So the first test is really establishing the operating base of the business. The business needs to have a solid operating base. I need to be confident that this company is going to be able to deliver, whether they have the right management team, the right operating assets, and that they know how to use those assets to their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of the analysis is kind of balance sheet and cash flow. And this is really important because this is where we see permanent impairment of equity value.
Mm.
If you invest in a business with the wrong balance sheet, the chances are you will lose your equity value and you will never recover again.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, really about the downside risk protection, which I think is really important. And then the second two parts of our investment process are kind of what valuation case can you make for these companies?
Mm.
We might look at it in a different way. And then really asking ourselves, what is this edge? And I would say it's the sort of combination of this together that is the overall Tema process edge, because you're taking care of the downside and you're thinking about the upside together as you're thinking about each stock. And it's this holistic approach really helps you. And the final question where we really try to ask ourselves, what's my edge in this stock?
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed how few fund managers out there actually, certainly the wider investing public, really ask themselves that question. And most are stumped. They're like, well, I have no idea. I just bought this because someone talked about it, or I like the it's high return. That's a classic question. And the truth is, you have to have a process, and this is the process that we've built, that you stick to consistently, and it's a holistic process where you ask some really difficult questions at the end. Is this a solid business? Does it have a good balance sheet? Can I make a valuation case? And what's my edge versus the market? And when we have that together, that's when we think we can produce alpha for clients.
When you're thinking about investments, then is there a consistent time horizon that you apply to potential opportunities?
Well, we're a thematic shop, so we think very, very long term, in sort of multiple decades of these themes. The stock market is operates on much shorter horizons, and so I think what's really interesting is that we have active fund managers that have to kind of marry these two things, like thinking about the long term theme, but also understanding the market can maybe shoot first. Price in the theme much faster than people think. And that's where it helps to have active management, because if that particular part of the theme gets priced in much quicker, for example, if you take American reshoring, gets priced, the robotic side gets priced in and all the stocks go nuts, then you can shift over to other parts that maybe are less out of favor, where the valuation case is more compelling. And I think that's kind of how we marry the two horizons. And once you marry those two things, you essentially get a horizon that's sort of roughly a kind of 2-3 year horizon, which is how we think about the stocks and analyze them.
When you approach new themes or potential opportunities, then is there a consistent way that you go about sizing the potential market or opportunity?
Yeah, so we define the themes, right, mm-hmm. using a lot of proprietary tools and understanding precisely, okay, this is the set of stocks that fits this particular theme.
Yeah.
And then after that, we look at kind of the total market cap of this industry, because I think one of the risks you have in thematic investing is just two niche funds, right, that are just too small. I can name many, many examples, but I'd rather not. Mm-hmm. And you just see them, you know, they go on the market, they're just providing what a niche exposure, and they've really tried hard to stick stocks in there. And again, it goes back to this point, right? It's about the substance of what you're getting as an investment product. It's not just about the headline story at the top of what this theme is. It's really what is in this portfolio. And so that's kind of how I think about that.
And Rakesh Bordia, Principal and Portfolio Manager at Pazena Investment Management, discussed the firm's unwavering discipline in value investing, leading to consistent results over the past 25 years.
What's your main source of edge versus peers in the wider market, if you had to narrow it down to just one thing?
It is basically our unwavering discipline and focus on value investing with the exact same process and philosophy that we have been using for 25 plus years. It has been, and we will not deviate from it, no matter what the market conditions or the investor sentiment is.
What time horizon do you typically invest over, and why is that time horizon important?
Yeah, our average holding period for stocks is around 3 to 5 years. And as I mentioned earlier, because we dabble in the deep value part of the universe, and that generally means that we are investing in businesses where there's no catalyst in sight and the company has a lot of uncertainty on the journey forward, which generally is a multi-year journey. That's the time frame you need for the stock to work as the company kind of goes through that journey of fixing its profitability or the industry demand supply to come in balance. And so 3 to 5 years is the time frame where most of our stocks need to basically show the market their true earnings potential, and the stock prices move in the same direction over that time period.
I wonder whether you're able to pinpoint any consistent characteristics or fundamentals present amongst all of or most of the businesses you invest in.
It's the most critical component that we are looking at is the businesses need to be really good businesses. So they need to have an economic moat around them. They need to have some differentiator which generates higher returns versus their competition. And as I mentioned, it could come from better products, better technology, better scale, better cost structure, or anything else, better execution, better manufacturing capability. And as long as the company has that unique economic advantage versus its competition, that is critical to for almost any investment we look at in our portfolio for, and not just for EM, but across the board at Pazena.
And finally, we talked with Anthony Ginsberg, CEO of Gins Global Index Funds. He took us through his investment strategy, utilizing equal weighting across tech holdings and tapping into themes driving the fourth industrial revolution.
How does Gins Global achieve alpha? What is your main source of edge versus peers in the wider the market?
Two quick ones. Equal weighting across 120 broad tech holdings and using eight tech sub-themes that represent the fourth industrial revolution. So not overweighting just the fangs.
What time horizon do you typically invest over and why?
Yeah. For technology, we would really suggest 3 to 5 years to remain in a fund like this, because there will be some ups and downs. But as you say, over almost a 5 year period, you know, we've produced close to 50% gains. So it's worth riding out some of the volatility over a period of, I'd say, minimum 3 years.
Of all the technological innovation and disruption you could be investing in, how do you go about approaching the sizing of a new market and assessing the long-term potential of a new theme or opportunity?
Yes. Well, in our case, we have metrics where the minimum market cap has to be $500 million, and we want to have 15 investable players for each of our sub-themes, such as robotics or social media or gene sequencing. So the way we avoid the fad syndrome is that you've actually got to have relatively large companies. Most of our holdings are typically large caps, a few mid caps, and then some mega caps. They've typically been around for a decade, many of these players. So we're not talking about fly-by-night firms. And that's, Hayden, probably the best way of saying these are relatively well-established trends, but they just may not have seen the light. And something like, you know, AI has been around for a while. All of a sudden, the light bulb kind of went on, and you've seen massive upside now, whether it's Microsoft or the likes of NVIDIA and Amazon, et cetera, benefiting. But they've typically been profitable companies for a while. That's sort of the way we avoid the downside risk.
I wonder if you're able to pinpoint any consistent characteristics or fundamentals present amongst the businesses you invest in.
Yes, they typically are all global. So that's why the global benchmark is important for us. They're large exporters typically, and they are benefiting from AI and other technology disruptions. So whether it's a social media firm or it's a cybersecurity player or a cloud firm or robotics, they benefit from the current trends, even the onshoring away from China. We see a lot of the robotics firms, Japanese companies, getting big contracts here in the US for automating factories. So I'd say it's the global theme, and also being adaptable. NVIDIA is a classic case where, being historically a game chip maker, they've segued massively into the cloud computing cybersecurity space.
As we conclude our journey through the minds of top investors and business leaders in this Alpha Study Roundup, we've gathered several actionable insights. From Sprott's focused expertise in precious metals to GINS Global's tech-savvy equal weighting strategies, Pzena's unwavering discipline in value investing, and Temma's pure play approach to company selection, these experts have shared their winning formulas for achieving alpha. Stay tuned for more exclusive interviews with industry leaders as Opto Sessions continues to seek out the brightest minds and discover the secrets behind their continued success. Just a quick reminder before I sign off. If you enjoyed this Opto Sessions episode, please don't forget to share it, rate our show, and follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We also release all our episodes on YouTube, so don't forget to subscribe to our channel. Until next time.